street lights around me, in the wall-to-wall prison of my city. Flickering dirty neon over alleys mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me.
Hello everybody, from the nightclub at the end of the world. Yes, indeedy. It's Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here with you on the 8th of September, 2013. And on the 9th of September in the year 2010, we had our first episode ever of the Lifeboat Hour here on PRN. What an amazing 3 years it's been. My friend Nick Dahlheim reminded me on Facebook today of a great quote by Terence McKenna, who I think really well, highly of. And Terence McKenna, in one of his talks, he said, this is by paraphrase, that we humans have the choice of finding ourselves through tapping into the wisdom of the Gaian mind or giving our spiritual energy to worrying about a system whose logic will result in the planet becoming a toxic waste dump ruled by gangs of neo-Nazis. And actually, now that I said that, I think we can just wrap up the whole show and go home. That pretty much sums it up. Carolyn Baker's with us tonight. Before I bring her in, I want to make a couple of comments. Radio New Zealand today posted apparently as a joke, which is good. Tokyo has overcome the Fukushima nuclear crisis to win the right to host the 2020 Olympics. The decision has been met with jubilation in Japan, which has been struggling to recover from the 2011 earthquake and subsequent nuclear disaster. Yes, that's absolutely insane. Now I want to read you something I wrote, because I'm really going to need Carolyn Baker's expertise with this. Well, actually, let's just bring her on. I'm not going to do the long intro. Carolyn Baker, carolynbaker.net, speaking truth to power. Whenever I'm not at this show, she's here doing it for me. You all know who she is, author of many books, friend, therapist. Hi, Carolyn. Welcome back.
Hi, Mike. It's great to be here again on this night in which we have, let's see, in a couple, maybe 48 hours, we're going to have our president standing in front of us on the eve of the anniversary of 9/11,
yes,
asking us to go to war and ally with Al-Qaeda. Isn't that interesting?
It certainly is. Now, I wrote this today, and I want to read this now and share it with the audience, as you and I are collaborating on this, because I think I've hit on a point here. I wrote, here's an interesting, the media push we know is on. Here's an interesting question. My personal opinion is that the power, influence, and effectiveness of mainstream media has eroded to a point where this media blitz, ironically and ominously close to the anniversary of 9/11, is going to have little or no impact on actual U.S. public opinion. But when the polls themselves are rigged, just like the voting software from which 2002 on delivered elections to chosen candidates, and most likely in Australia this week, what's the point? In 1984, George Orwell did not see or have people debating Big Brother, but he did not have the Internet as a means of resistance for the preservation of sanity and the self. I think the point is the charade itself that we're seeing, Carolyn, just as with the Olympic announcement. And when the charade becomes totally disconnected from reality, we enter the most dangerous of times. Does the White House chief of staff really believe there is no more debate about Assad's guilt? Really? These times really concern me, because the further and further the world gets from reality, the less effective is any dialogue or discussion. Even though there have been many demonstrations against the attacks around the world, pending attacks, the reported numbers are disappointing. Yet we most assuredly know that congressional offices have been hit with an unprecedented tsunami of emails, faxes, and phone calls that must continue even increase. Over all the years since 9/11, I've never got excited about projected new false flag attacks or in or against the U.S. around the anniversary. But now, just 3 days away from another anniversary, and in the midst of this madness, I have to say that I am extremely ill at ease. I believe it's a given that the administration is aware of the actual pervasive and overwhelming opposition to the attacks. It's not time to lighten up on any pressure, but rather increase it. I have to believe that popular pressure, both from within the U.S. and all nations of the world, might succeed. I believe there's a shot in preventing attacks which will certainly result in immediate military response from Iran, Russia, and China. It's also certain, relying on repeated Syrian government statements, that with the first missile strikes, Syria will attack Israel. The whole region, as we know, will explode. In a dark and twisted shadow of the prophecy of the eagle and the condor, I wonder if Israeli and Saudi warplanes will fly wingtip to wingtip. We can all grasp and hold in our consciousness that what we're talking about, a global nuclear conflict involving the U.S., Israel and its allies on one side, China and Russia, Iran, and the rest of the world on the other, within days or a week, the imperatives become much clearer and more focused. All human beings and all nations of the world must continue toward every possible avenue to prevent the attacks, because there may be no tomorrows afterwards. Two parallel questions arise, Carolyn, and they are bone-chilling because of what they reveal and what they have in common. Did the International Olympic Committee award Tokyo the 2020 Games because it knows the Games will never take place? Industrial civilization won't make it that far. It won't matter. And are the United States at all, you know, its allies, Israel and Saudi governments, going to conduct the strikes on Syria because they know there will be no more elections and no possible retribution or accountability afterwards? When viewed that way, the collapse at Reactor Building 4, the imminent collapse there, and what's still getting worse at Fukushima and missile strikes, appear to be really similar events. Both lead quickly to outcomes in which debate, discussion, accountability, and recovery are absolutely moot. Now, very briefly, Carolyn, before I throw this open here, something else came to me today. Rubble can't be held accountable for anything, and there can be no accountability if we have World War III nuclear exchanges, or if the control of Fukushima is lost. And in other words, I think psychologically the species understands that it's too late to become accountable for all of the accumulated mistakes that we have made. But accountability implies an account, that somebody can pay from to set things right, but rubble cannot be held accountable because there's no making anything right. Does that resonate with you? Now, that was a long intro, but this is where my head really is right now. Is the human race just begging to be not accountable, and the way to achieve that is to destroy itself?
Well, I think that the consciousness of the human race is definitely suicidal. What I don't understand is why the powers that be, who are totally invested in keeping this game going and making as much money as possible, would want to take us into World War III and have us all dead in 2 weeks. That's the part I don't get.
Well, it could possibly be because Mother Earth has run out of resources, peak oil has made it no longer profitable, and there's no more room for growth on a finite planet. Could that be it?
Yeah, and I can't see them not wanting to keep the game going just a little bit longer, as long as they possibly can. And then maybe they got their plans to, you know, go to Mars or something. I don't know. But it just doesn't make sense to me, because this is the powers that be wanting to commit suicide and start World War III. I can get why the common people, you know, all of us little 1%ers or 99%ers, would be suicidal, but I don't understand why the powers that be are doing this. I just don't.
Well, I think, and I actually I wrote this many years ago frequently, and I put it in Crossing the Rubicon, but from the wilderness. I believe these people crave their own destruction.
And why is that?
Well, they understand that they have milked everything that they can for as long as they can. This is the end of the game. You can't keep this game going any longer. I mean, if you look at Guy McPherson's work, you know, near-term extinction by 2030, the climate change aspect, all of the implications of Fukushima, which Helen Caldicott helped us with 2 weeks ago immensely, and the outcome of World War III, of course, there is no keeping the game going. But I think that they realize that the game is over anyway. They have known about peak oil. We were together at FTW for years. That they have known about peak oil, and they could do the 2 plus 2 equals 4 themselves. They've known all this was coming for a long time.
Well, you know, for them to really overtly decide to commit suicide for themselves would mean that they have the courage and the wisdom somehow to accept and embrace death. And they don't. They will fight it to the last drop. And I just don't see these egotistical bastards wanting to give up and die at this point. I just don't.
So, yeah, but Adolf Hitler felt the same way.
Well,
And when he was cornered, and I don't think anybody can argue that there was built into it an undeniable death wish with the Nazi Germany.
Well, certainly there is a death wish on the part of a lot of people. I'm just not sure that that all of the powers that be are on board with that. I can see one or two people being on board with it, but I can't see all of them. You could be right, you know, but it's hard for me to wrap my mind around that.
We have seen both of us in our travels. You know, I'll speak for 12-step recovery. We have seen alcoholics who drank themselves to death, having deluded themselves to the point where they believed that they were still going to get a handle on it somehow. Cocaine addicts exploding their hearts and brains, thinking they had everything perfectly under control. There is a distinct sense of madness with that. Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, and the paradigm that we have lived in for the last 7,000 years of infinite growth. Is one that will never be satisfied because there is no end. They have reached the physical limits, but I've seen alcoholics bleeding out of many orifices, ordering a drink sitting on a bar stool.
Right, right.
And here's where I go back to the scorpion and the turtle. The powers that were who have run this planet. For, let's say, going back to Adam and Eve, or 7,000 years ago, or whatever, during this era, have been dark from the start. They've had a good long run, but they are discovering that they, too, are not gods. And that's a hard delusion to give up, the delusion of absolute impotence. I can control everything. And there is madness to all of us. How many articles have we seen, and how many great people have we seen talk about the sociopathy and the psychotic behavior of these people in terms of the way they operate? These consequences have been in front of them, not just right now, but they've been in front of them for 30 years.
Well, I guess what I would like to know more about, and not that you know necessarily, but who are the people really pulling the strings behind this? Who are the men behind the curtain? You know, is it Obama? Is it Kerry? Is it the Pentagon? Is it the CIA? Who is actually doing this? Because that would give us a greater clue as to who the madmen are.
Well, I spent my whole life trying to teach people who they are, and it's the people who control the money. Until you change the way money works, you change nothing. And it is the banks. It is because the banks now own the United States government. $13 trillion worth of bank debt transferred onto our books. The banks own. Infinite growth owns Barack Obama. So, you know, we have never succeeded in making a list. But that doesn't absolve us, all 7 billion of us. And this is where I want to turn this around. If there's 7 billion of us and we're 99%, it's not those bad guys that are on trial right now. It's us.
Absolutely.
We have to stop this.
Absolutely. And that is why I wrote the article that I wrote this week that is on my website, Necessary and Unnecessary Wars.
Yes.
And, you know, the unnecessary one we're talking about right now, the one that we need to be talking about is the necessary one, which has to do with a spiritual war on our own unconsciousness and the transformation of that. And if we do survive what's coming in the next weeks and months, if we have months, then we need to be focused on nothing else but that war, that holy war within ourselves.
Yes. Yes, and sorry for not mentioning that. Tell people about that article and where they can find it.
They can find it on my website, carolynbaker.net, Necessary and Unnecessary Wars. I wrote it just a couple of days ago.
I'm going to have to get that up on my Facebook page. I'm sure some. I got thousands of Facebook fans listening tonight. Somebody go find Carolyn's article and put it on my Facebook
page. Yeah, it's on my Facebook page as well.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That's the point. And this goes to the theme I've been pursuing now for a year and a half now, solidly, which is the spiritual component of this. And, of course, perfect to weave in Graham Hancock's amazing focus that gave us a true understanding that this is a war for consciousness, our consciousness.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely.
Before we play a song, before we play a song, with regard to Tokyo.
Yeah, let's all come and get radiated.
I was sitting outside. I was banging my head. I was walking around the prayer circle for like an hour, you know, just in circles. But something came to me. Everybody who made that decision at the IOC and everybody from the Japanese government who went to influence the IOC have a very clear understanding of the situation at Fukushima. They cannot claim to be unaware.
Right.
Radiation, by the way, is up to 2,200 microsieverts. 1,800 microsieverts the week before last was enough to kill you within 4 hours, so 2,200 is getting worse by the minute. And parenthetically, I should add that one of the remaining cranes there broke today, and when Helen broke last week, or the arm just broke off, Helen Caldicott was very clear in telling us something that I already knew, that radiation turns metal extremely brittle, which mm-hmm. raises enormous questions about the cranes which don't even exist to move the fuel rods out of four. But leaving that aside, all those people knew, and yet they awarded this, and yet so. They must inwardly believe there is no accountability and there will be no accountability. I mean, that's a psychotic decision, right?
Oh, it absolutely is. And, you know, all I can think of is by 2020, there won't be any living people in
exactly.
Japan.
Nobody,
my God.
Yes. Nobody will be able to hold them up and say, why did you do this? But and that, I think, is at the heart of all 7 billion of us who are now faced with this monumental and yet elegantly simple battle that must be waged inside of ourselves. That's all it is. You know, we're being held up. Why didn't you stop this sooner? Now, here we walk the fine edge between shame, guilt, and punishment, forgiveness, repentance, and amends. But the human race is also beginning to get that we've had so many chances, and that's why this contest now is so important.
Well, you know, shame gets a lot of bad press, and, you know, used improperly, it should get bad press. But the good news is not only is shame the way down, shame is the way up. And sometimes a little shame is good for the soul. And it brings about accountability, and then it can sometimes bring about transformation from there. And we don't have much time for that to happen, but that's got to happen. And if it doesn't, then we are all toast.
Indeed we are. And that kind of is a good place to set up the first song tonight, which you picked, but I have to confess it is one of the most important songs of my life, which I've never played on the show. But I am so glad that you picked it. Why don't you tell us what you picked and why, and then I'll say a couple words, and then we'll roll End of the Innocence.
Well, I picked Don Henley's This is the End of the Innocence, and I also included that in my article that I was just talking about. You know, we stand here as Americans and we say, you know, we wash our hands, and the human race is doing this as well. We're innocent. We're not accountable. We don't have to be accountable for anything. And, you know, Don Henley says, offer up your best defense, but this is the end. This is the end of innocence.
That's beautiful. It's one of my favorite songs in the whole world.
Mine too.
I used to sing and cover it, but it's Don Henley and another musician who I'd have the greatest respect and admiration for, Bruce Hornsby on piano, with some of the most incredible piano riffs I have ever heard. Don Henley, The End of the Innocence. Here we go.
care in the world. Mommy and Daddy standing by. But happily ever after fails, and we've been poisoned by these fairy tales. The lawyers dwell on small details since Daddy had to fly. Oh, but I know a place where we can go. Still
you know, and the piano always lifts you up. It just makes you feel light there in the end. That's Bruce Hornsby. Those chords are just breathtaking. That song came out in like about 88 or 89, and I remember it very well. And I try to recall the world that existed in 1988 or 89, we had so many chances available, so many resources available to us. There were so many things that were not yet so badly broken that, you know, had we come to that awakening then, we would be well on the way to avoiding much of what's here. But the foundation of all mental illness is the avoidance of legitimate suffering, as Carl Jung would say. This week, Carolyn, a former chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, in a story that was posted on Alternate, let me pull the names up, I believe it's William Collins or Emily Schwartz Greco, one of the two, said that every nuclear reactor in the U.S. should be shut down immediately.
Yeah, I saw that story and reported it on my digest as well. Yeah.
All right, but this was a very scary one, from ENE News just a couple days ago. Nuclear expert, the biggest concern of Fukushima is the huge source of radioactivity from molten fuel and spent fuel pools winding up in the ocean.
Yes.
The health of the entire Northern Pacific is at stake. And, of course, if you've been following what we've done here on the Lifeboat Hour, but what we've been tracking on Facebook, all of that situation is horrendously out of control, deteriorating rapidly. The tanks are not welded. They are leaking more and more profusely. And the whole world is still behaving. See, all of these decisions, it might have been shocking to think that, you know, the powers that be could actually make these choices. But the truth of the matter is, looking in the mirror, it's us who made those choices.
And it is us who really needs to be dealing now with the reality of death, whether
yes.
you're 23 or 73.
Yes.
You need to be dealing with the reality of death. And the way you do that is you live your life to the fullest every day. I've written about this extensively. Guy McPherson posted my latest mm-hmm. about Fukushima, about how we deal and cope with all of this. And as we come down to the end of life, which is what we're all, regardless of our age, approaching, and how do we do this? And there are a lot of tools that I'm offering and that other people are offering. They're out there, so let's use them.
Use them now like we have never used anything else
yes.
before.
Yes. We're all in hospice. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, this is your last chance. And, the saying deathbed conversion has a great many meanings, and quite frankly, it's when human beings get close to death. That saying about your life flashes before your eyes, but, you know, you begin to understand things because you are finally in a state of reasonableness. You have been broken open.
Yes.
We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. Going to take a break in a minute. After we go to break and come back, we'll be taking your calls. It's our third anniversary show. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. Questions for me or Carolyn Baker tonight after the break. So I wrote this week. This is a short thing that I put up this week, but it's also important, I think, psychologically for people to get on the right side of the issue, to take a stand. And I've kind of waged a little war on defeatism. Boy, there's been a lot of that showing up. This is no time for that now. And this is what I put up on September 5th. Your weapon is not a rifle or a gun. Your weapon may be an email and a phone call to your members of Congress. Your weapon might be carrying a picket sign in a demonstration or interrupting a government meeting. Your weapon might be wearing a T-shirt that says no attack on Syria or making 100 T-shirts and giving them away. Your weapon might be using your body to blockade a railroad line shipping weapons or a company loading dock at Lockheed Martin or Boeing or Raytheon or General Motors or Disneyland or Budweiser or Coca-Cola or Fox News. Your weapon might be getting arrested to clog every jail in every city. Your weapon might be offering your body as a human shield, which is happening. Tens of thousands of Syrians are now posting themselves as human shields around military targets inside Syria. Your weapon might be dying in the name of peace, but your weapon is probably something that is not listed here because you haven't thought of it yet. Your weapon is not defeatism. Your weapon is not giving up and saying it's a done deal. Your weapon is not listing all the reasons why we have failed before and are sure to fail again. Your weapon is not perpetrating the propaganda that the evil ones are invincible. Your weapon is especially not discouraging those who are fighting for you and all around you and right in front of you. Find your weapon. Fire your weapon. You can do it. Do it now. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, on the Lifeboat Hour here on Progressive Radio Network. I will be back with Carolyn Baker taking your calls right after this break.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Your living is a good life.
Yeah, living's a good life at the track. That's bandmate, band leader Doug Lewis of New White Trash from our first album, Double Wide. You can find that and our second album, Age of Authority, at newwhitetrash.com. Help yourself. Go listen for free. If you want to download them, you can pay, I forget what it is, $11 for that. $11.11 per album and whatever, that's fine. I don't think anybody's worried about selling shit right now. I just can't get into it, you know? Carolyn, we are back. We're back with Carolyn Baker. Man, people had need to do something, and doesn't the act, Carolyn Baker, of just doing something also improve your state of consciousness? There's an old line that I remember. You can't think your way into right action, but you can act your way into right thinking.
Yeah, that's a good one. Absolutely. And even as we are in hospice, we need to be doing lots and lots of service, lots and lots of opportunities to make a difference for whatever that means or however long that means. You know, I began my article, and by the way, I want to direct people to another article here that is posted on Guy McPherson's website, guymcpherson.com, Fukushima, Climate Change, Near-Term Extinction, Resignation versus Surrender. I wrote that last week, and he posted it on his site, and I began it with just a little short piece from Antonio Machado, the poet. All things die and all things live forever, but our task is to die making roads, roads over the sea. So even as we are leaving, as we are, you know, vacating this planet, whenever that is, we need to be doing as much as possible.
1-888-874-4888 if you want to ask Carolyn or me a question, that's fine. We're okay talking, and we got some really good numbers tonight. So what my sense is, you just want us to keep talking. You know, they treat us like we're elders and we know something, Carolyn, but we've been around for a long freaking time. And you know, I've been at this for 35 years, but you and I met in what, 99 or 2000?
Yeah, the like year that. 2000, yep.
That was before 9/11, and we had become friends then. You know, as we look at this, I just had this moment of clarity that it is so apparent now to anyone who looks at a statement like, The Olympic Games being awarded to Tokyo, or Barack Obama demanding, forcing his way almost unilaterally on his own as emperor to push for these strikes. And I do believe there's a shot we can shut him down, and if we do, it's a whole new world. But 7 billion of us have to do it together, not just Americans, but every country in the world. All 7 billion of us as humans have to unite on this issue, have to get on this page. We're on trial now. But, you know, so many of us were saying for so long, and you wrote many pieces for From the Wilderness, and you wrote for CollapseNet, and we knew they were crazy then, and it was obvious to anyone who could take that into their consciousness that if the issues were not addressed, then we were going to wind up here, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. You know, as I constantly say, here we are, you know. We warned you about this in 2000. Here we are now. You know, and I remember the research that you did and I did and so many of our buddies did in 2006 and 2007, talking about who Barack Obama really was. And, you know, all I was getting was, oh, you're so negative. Oh, the first black president. Oh, yada, yada, yada. He's so wonderful. And here we are.
Well, you know, even I had a little high hope for him when he was first inaugurated, only because when Bush and Cheney left office, several covert operations dedicated to ending my business and sometimes my life ended because I had made personal enemies of Cheney and Rumsfeld.
Right,
But you know, that hope quickly dissipated, and I think we can say that you know, Obama is not Bush light. He's Bush. He might be darker than George W. Bush.
Right.
Not darker than George Herbert Walker Bush. I don't think that's possible. But so we are on. It's a progressive disease. Over any considerable time, it gets worse. Where have we heard that before?
Right. Exactly. And I'm also curious as to, as I talked about earlier, who are some of the people pulling the strings behind him? Because, you know, he's the emperor, but he doesn't make all the decisions.
No. And, you know, Caesar was stabbed many times on the floor of the Senate, too. I mean,
right.
You know, so, and I think we have a pretty good idea who they are. It's the same who gave us George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those people have never been out of power, and that's pretty clearly established. It's money.
Right.
It's
right.
Money. How many things? You know, if I only had a nickel for every time I said in my life, until you change the way money works, you change nothing.
Right.
So we are clear on that now. And I saw a really cool picture today from a major demonstration in London. Abolish money was the sign being held.
Oh, I love it.
And I said, finally, you know,
yes.
You know, finally. But now we have to stop an insane interest group managed by Barack Obama, whose personal ego is absolutely involved in this, as is his masculinity, I believe, psychotically.
Sure.
I mean, isn't this the quintessential sick male paradigm that's being played out?
Well,
here?
It is. It's patriarchy on steroids, no pun intended. It absolutely is. You know, the whole negative masculine scene just off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And and that's what the money system is, by the way. That's what the money system is. And one of my great heroes, of course, and I think you enjoy him as well, is Charles Eisenstein. The whole sacred economics paradigm, which is what we've got to move to. And regardless of, you know, when J.P. Morgan and Goldman Sachs folds, you know, when all of this goes down the tube, we've got to move into that paradigm right now in the way we live our lives, because, you know, it starts with us.
Well, yeah, there's two approaches on that, and it's a paradox that I can see both sides of. I mean, I know a great many people who, you know, went to get off the grid. They started composting, growing their own organic vegetables. They bought a Prius, but they did absolutely nothing to challenge the paradigm that was destroying the planet.
Right.
To challenge industrial activity, infinite growth. And they rationalized that they had done their part when they hadn't done shit, pardon my French.
Right, right.
So there's an attitudinal adjustment that's necessary from an energetic standpoint inside. But we have, and you said this clearly right at the top of the program, as I did, and I haven't mentioned this during the show yet. I did with Gary before the show, that as we went to air tonight, the Egyptian government had closed the border with Gaza, not a good sign. The Turkish government had announced it was moving Air Force and troops to the Syrian border. I mean, all of these signs of imminent war are upon us. But, Carolyn, you said it clearly. We have days to do something here. That's
yes.
It.
Yes.
Now, fortunately, I think the perception is getting clearer. The what that we have to do, unlike when Occupy, you know, was so big, where the list of demands was 147,000. Now we're down to like one demand: prevent the attacks at all costs.
Right.
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 Okay.
And I'm wondering if there are any callers out there that have any comments or questions. We'd love to hear from you.
You know, I know that during Gary's show before, they had some technical difficulties getting callers through. You and I normally get a flood of calls.
Yeah.
Let me put the number out again, 1-888-874-4888. It's our third anniversary here on the Lifeboat Hour at Progressive Radio Network. So please, man, if you got something you want to ask Carolyn or me, pick up the phone, call in. Okay. So anyway, that's put out again. Where were we? What were, okay, so
the paradigm of money and changing it, changing how we do it, and not having this attitude that I got a Prius and I grow some vegetables, so everything's cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but I think that other money system, if they don't blow us up in the next 2 weeks, is going to eventually bring itself down. I just think it will.
Well, I think it will, too. Now, I want to... I think we got a call coming in. What, you know, let's go to that first because I lost my train of thought.
Sure, go for it.
Tom in Los Angeles, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I just wanted to add, because I haven't heard you mention his name in a while, but I think maybe now would be also a good time, and I've been praying every day, just for prayer, just universal prayer first, before we descend upon Washington, because I believe with our collective consciousness we can actually influence many, many decisions.
What name was it you wanted me to mention?
I think you brought up an example some years ago. You said that we were at the brink of going to war with Iran, and there was a mass prayer vigil over the airwaves all over the place.
Ah, okay, good. And now we got calls stacking up. Thanks, guys. I'll take that real quick, and then we can move on to two more callers. That's good.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you. It has been shown definitively. I learned of this first through videos and presentations by Greg Braden, but focused meditations before the start of I believe it was Gulf 2, actually changed electromagnetic readings. We are now to the point of the hard physical science, and thank you for bringing this up, Tom, that consciousness does determine collective reality. That is the spiritual evolution that the human race stands at the brink of.
Yes.
It has been shown on many different occasions that the Earth's magnetic field can change the incidence of violence, crime in Washington, D.C. Now is an amazing time to pray and to envision peace. Thank you. I didn't think of that. Now we got some calls stacking up. Carolyn, I know we'll pick up on that theme, but let's go to Jack in California right away. Jack,
hey, Carolyn.
Hey, Jack.
Yes, I am. Hi, Mike and Carolyn.
Hi.
Hey, I'm listening to the program this evening, and a quick comment, if I may, on words. You're both wordsmiths, and I hear some words that are used interchangeably, like freedom and liberty are often used interchangeably, and they are not the same thing. Freedom is just half of the side of liberty, and the other side of it is responsibility.
Right.
That great lady in New York Harbor is not called the Statue of Freedom. She's the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who came here seeking freedom, like my parents, took responsibility for their freedom and so earned their liberty. And for decades, we have been slowly abrogating our responsibility for our freedom and surprised that we're losing our liberty.
Jack, and I think I recognize your voice.
You might. I was in the front row when you gave the post-human speech in at the Echo Fest in Grass Valley.
Yes, sir. That was a great day and a great time. Thank you for the incredible point. I appreciate that. Now the calls are pouring in. Names I recognize, Carolyn. We're going to be busy. So let's do it. Do you have anything you want to throw in on that?
No, I just thank Jack for his comment. That's absolutely right. And we've abdicated our responsibility, and here we are.
Here we are. All right, let's go to Lois in California, get a lady in here, and I got a feeling I know who this one is, too.
Hi, am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Hi, Lois.
Okay, hi, Mike. Hi, Kathy, Carolyn. I just wanted to mention something about Barack Obama, and I'll preface by saying I think Mike knows I'm on the same page as you folks and have been following this stuff for two decades at least. But what saddens me, I think, a lot about Barack Obama, and being a woman of 68 years old and having experienced the whole civil rights movement, what I think is really sad is that the powers that were put up a black man to take the fall. It makes me very sad. And I do think he, you know, he's a puppet. I'm sorry I voted for him. I got caught up in the whole the whole thing. I cried through his inauguration, even though I was arguing with everyone against him. But I just wanted to point that out, and I try to point it out in a lot of posts and things where people are blaming him, because he doesn't have a choice, in my opinion. I think he was selected, and he's got to do what he is told.
Well, I think that's part of it, but I have sources inside intelligence circles, and they connect me with Washington, and I am told that he's a very aggressive, hands-on manager who likes his role.
Well, I'm not sure that's not true. In fact, I would agree with you that's true, but without going into all of the research I've done into his background, he was pretty much promoted to presidency. So, yeah, I think he takes it very seriously. I guess the point I'm trying to make is there are so many racist types that are going to not understand the big picture, and they'll say, yeah, we can't have a black man for president. Look at what he did. That's the point I wanted to make.
Okay, thank you very much. We appreciate that.
And that makes me sad. Okay, thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Carolyn?
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty straightforward, but what kept running through my head is racism is a moot point if all 7 billion of us are dead, isn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely is. It absolutely is. I remember during the inauguration, I saw a number of photos, and I didn't Photoshop it, but I cut one down to size where during the swearing in, the first swearing in, right behind Obama, a couple of rows back, very obvious was Jay Rockefeller.
Uh-huh.
And I know that he just happened to be there,
yes.
But I just thought the position of that, you know, him right behind Obama was just too perfect, and so it's one of my favorite photos.
Indeed. We got a couple of calls stacking up. Let's go. I'm going to play my song in a minute. We will go first to Alan in North Carolina. Alan, are you there?
Hey, guys. Thanks
hey,
for having
Alan.
Me on.
Been appreciating, go ahead, man.
Been appreciating the show tonight. I just want to throw a few things out. You started tonight's show. You were talking about the idea of suicidal tendencies among the power elite, and also the idea of confronting our own death, our death instinct, mm-hmm. as well as consciousness shaping reality. I'm someone who's been dealing with all of these subjects, so it really inspired me to call you tonight. I'm writing a book. Writing a book called Suicide Kings, and it's basically exploring just that. So I just want to say, from my standpoint, it's very, very much so that there is a suicidal tendency. And it's not necessarily completely dark, because there's also the idea that it's really, I think, on a collective level, it's all of us trying to confront a death, trying to confront the end of what this is, of realizing that we're at the end, even if it's not on a extinction level of some sort of end of American supremacy or any kind of comfort that we claim to have here. So that's definitely there. What I guess I want to get your perspectives on is, assuming that we're not all dead, nonetheless, if America is to have this struggle, to have this military struggle, I can very much see this playing out in a German fashion where we very quickly become the world enemy, and where things are falling apart here at home, I'd like you to speak to the idea of a collapse and the civil unrest that would come with that, and people making very poor decisions that might come from that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Carol.
Well, no, I think that's absolutely right. And, I mean, the ire that we're hearing right now from other countries, I watch Russia TV and Al Jazeera all the time, and the ire that we're hearing, I mean, absolutely, we're going to be a huge enemy to the rest of the world, and I think it's going to exacerbate the internal collapse and civil unrest.
I would add that I think that a great deal of the world absolutely understands that most of the American people are abjectly opposed to what is occurring in our country.
Right.
And I know from my own international contacts on my Facebook page, she's all over the world, but also, you know, from all my years out there, that it is very well perceived that there is a substantial, energetic, dedicated, and devoted resistance inside the United States of America. But the bottom line, I think, to all of this is either the American people allow this or we don't. There's no, I mean, the test is so simple. You know, will we allow this to happen or not? And I cannot subscribe to the helpless victim role here. I won't do it. Still there?
Hello? Here. I'm here. Alan must be gone.
Okay, yes, I believe Alan is gone. Okay, Carolyn, you have anything on that?
We
did that. We have one more call.
Well, let's go ahead and take that person. I want to hear what they have to say.
Okay. Mimi in Portland, Oregon. Are you there?
I am, and thanks for having me on your show, and thanks for doing the show. I'm a part of a very large, and hopefully one day it will be larger, citizen radiation watch group. We, most of us, have our own Geiger counters, and we are consumed on a 24/7 basis with what's going on in Fukushima.
Right.
Because I live in Portland, I'm affected directly and considerably quickly from every time there's a release that goes on in Fukushima.
Sure.
But what it's been interesting listening to the callers, because there's a premise that I've been dealing with and I've been noticing, that we have all of this time to talk about these issues like war, like how do Americans feel about this? How does the world feel about us? And in the meantime, for me, yes, being consumed by what's going on at Fukushima, I can only look at what's happening hour to hour to our entire planet, because it's affecting so much, not just the Pacific, but on a world basis, on a global basis, everyone and no one, relatively speaking, no one is talking about this. We know that no governments are talking about this. We know that the Japanese government lies about it. We know that TEPCO is ridiculous.
Right.
And that this is something that is going to cause our collapse at the rate it's going pretty quickly, you know, and coming in November with moving the rods from Building 4.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting that people who are informed about, you know, life issues, political issues, still aren't talking about this as if we have time.
Well, I think it's still really hard for people to get their minds and their hearts around the fact that we're in hospice. And there's a huge denial of death. This is happening very, very quickly. We don't have time, and we need to stop talking as if we do. And I think that's part of the issue, is this denial of death, as if, you know, we've got all this time.
I couldn't agree with you more. And when I tuned in a little bit late and heard that you were talking, I guess at the beginning of the show, about suicidal tendencies. We are creating suicide. These aren't even tendencies anymore.
Yes.
Right.
You know, this is all happening now, and there's no conspiracy here other than what's going on at TEPCO and the Japanese government and the U.S. government being in cahoots with all of this, because GE is here.
And so when we talk about near-term extinction as possibly being 2030, according to Guy McPherson's research, you know, maybe we should be talking about nearer-term extinction, which is a lot sooner than that.
What kind of readings are you getting, Mimi? Are you getting elevated?
It's very interesting. The readings that we get recently, 2 days ago, we were getting high readings with the rain that was coming in. Normally, our readings, let's see, in 2012, when we first got our Geiger counter, and I have to say, this is for everybody listening out there, you can all, if you can't afford a good Geiger counter like the Inspector, they're $550 on Amazon, you can go to your community and put a message out, which is exactly what we did here. Our group is called No Nukes in Northwest. We don't make any money, so it doesn't matter to talk about us. But we put a message out to our community saying we need a Geiger counter because our city doesn't know what our rads are. Our government, our state doesn't know what our rads are. I've been to Wyden's office. He doesn't know anything about what our rads are, even though
really?
He's gone to Fukushima. Yes, and we had the community buy our inspector.
Mm.
And our inspector Geiger counter travels. I just got it back because I knew the rains were coming and I wanted to find out what was going on. So in 2012, when we got the Geiger counter, probably around April in 2012,
mm-hmm.
our reads here were about an average of 23 counts per minute. We don't know what they were before that because nobody, if people did do readings from the state, nobody knows what they are. We've called everybody from the EPA to the Oregon Department of Agriculture to, I mean, everyone,
check,
to the senator's offices.
Check with PSU and any universities in the Portland area. They should have radiation monitoring stations in some of their science buildings.
Right, and they do not. Including Reed. Reed College, which is located inside Portland, has a nuclear reactor. Now, when we got our Geiger counter, and that is true, it is a working nuclear reactor at Reed College.
1 minute left in the whole show, so you got to be quick. I got 1 minute.
Okay, so anyway, our readings at the time last year were 23. They're basically around the same here. But if you go to Philadelphia and you go to North Carolina and you go up into Canada, into Ontario, you will get such high reads. Montana, and this is all Fukushima, Seattle, San Diego, these are where the high reads are, and this is from the jet stream.
How can people find out more? We're literally down to the last 20 seconds of the show. Thank you, Carolyn Baker. I'll be saying goodbye out of this. How do people find you, get in contact with you, or find out what you're doing so that you can teach them?
They can go to, on Facebook, they can go to No Nukes Northwest, and we can guide them to anywhere from there.
No Nukes
Northwest on Facebook in Portland.
No Nukes Northwest. Everybody, this is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth. We hope to be with you next week. We don't know unless you stand up and prevent Barack Obama from bombing, attacking Syria. We don't know for a lot of reasons, but I'll be back with you next week if everything is still here. But understand that we will be with you all the way, and there are all of us here looking it straight in the eye, and that's the way we want it. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Carolyn Baker. Good night, everybody.
Mike.
We are flat out of time.
Bye-bye.